Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Says so on the hat. We have so many sponsors that have helped us make this merger from WNST into the BaltimorePositive.com space and our podcast Audio Vault all functioning. Among them, Sporticulture, our friends at Royal Farms with the Western fries that I'll be eating all throughout the election when Mueller's freaking out with Kornacki on the big board and all that. And the El Guapo shirt that I have that Don Mueller has not gotten yet. Where
I still don't understand it. I don't understand where my shirt is.
I told Evan I need some State Fair fare as well, like a hat and whatever. But he says, just enjoy the chicken and waffles and the shrimp and grits. And I'm waiting on the quesadillas and certainly some of those duck carnitas at El Guapo. We'll be over in the Ville soon for that. Our friends at Fately's are shipping crab cakes all over the world. I have a feeling our guest in this segment would probably like some crab cakes shipped to them because they are sort of local, but not anymore, and they'd like some things, and we'll talk about cheesesteaks and pretzels and my escape from Philadelphia 2 weeks ago. Even though I'm wearing Eagles green, El Guapo State Fair and Fadley's are great sponsors that hold this whole thing together, as well as Mueller and Gary Realty, and our friends at Taharka that are bringing out the new flavor. This is the Mint Flicks and Chills and the Honey Graham. They're all delicious. They have a new one called Black is Beautiful. I'll probably have that on the set here this week. It's chocolate stout made in partnership with the brewing folks over at Monumental. Yeah, I know. It's wow. I know. And we're going to home deliver this stuff, and we're going to give even like our friends that are coming on right now a little discount code for the holidays to ship the eggnog and the apple pie crumb and the peppermint bark and all that stuff. Woo! Ice cream, fun, memories. Don, you got friends on in this segment. This is sort of like Don's little, we'd say the holidays. Don loves all the holidays, the Thanksgivings, the 4th of July. He's into all of that. But the real holiday is the election that happens every 4 years. It's happening this week. We're all very nervous for him. We're worried. I think you're like on support this week trying to unload your Rolodex of friends to get you off the ledge a little bit here, Don.
I need all of my therapists on board this week.
You got a whole family in this time. It's crazy.
Nobody is sleeping. Everybody is as nervous as they can be. But our two guests today, and we're going to introduce Laszlo Boyd and Flora Wolf from Philadelphia by way of Lewis, Delaware. We're delighted to welcome them to Baltimore Positive. We're going to have them talk a little bit about their backgrounds and how they got to where they are. And then we're going to talk about a little group that they formed that is the little engine that could, called Change Pennsylvania. And I think it's a real model for people who want to start making a difference across the 50 states of the United States. So, Laszlo and Flora, welcome to Baltimore Positive.
Thank you, Don.
Flora, let's start with you. Let's go ladies first. Tell folks a little bit about your background long before you got to Change Pennsylvania, who you are and how you got to where you are.
Okay, well, long ago, I'm actually a Washingtonian, born and bred. I married a Philadelphian way back when, and after he died tragically young, I stayed, and eventually I found Laszlo and imported him. Yeah, I'm a lawyer and a judge by training and occupation. I'm happily retired from both those careers, and I'm the mother of two grown children, four grandchildren. Laszlo's four of mine too. I've been in politics off and on since before I ran for judge, and I've been having an awfully good time.
Well, we're going to talk about that good time. And Laszlo, you're somebody who, as a transported Marylander, you're very, very familiar with Maryland politics. You worked for Governor Glenn Denning. You've been at the highest levels of the state education system. So we've got politics and government, and education, two of our favorite topics. Tell folks a little bit about your background, Laszlo, particularly in Maryland and how it related to Maryland politics.
Sure. Don, I hate to be the one to correct you, but my friends would never forgive you and me if they left the idea that I worked for Paris Glendening.
Oh, I'm sorry.
William Donald Schaefer.
William Donald Schaefer. What was I thinking? William Donald Schaefer.
Yeah.
I was going to jump in there because I did my homework.
No,
and I'm
it's
like,
William Donald Schaefer. I was thinking about Paris Glendening or something else. You're one of the many Schaeferites.
Yes, I am. I worked for him. I was his education advisor when he was governor. Most of my background is in universities. I went to George Washington and University of Pennsylvania. I taught political science for years and years. My most recent university stop was at Towson University, not far from you all, where I was the chief of staff to the president for a while. I've been in Pennsylvania. I got lured up there, but I went to graduate school here, so I love the city. We live in Center City, and got really involved in politics this after the last election, which is what you want the lead-in to be.
Yeah, well, it is the lead-in, and I was thinking as we prepared to chat with both of you, I have PTSD, like so many of my friends, from 2016, November the 8th. I think back vividly to that night when the announcement was made that Donald Trump had won. I remember I had a friend sitting on the couch, and she literally, this is not hyperbole, she sobbed openly. And I think many in this divided nation, many celebrated, many sobbed. You all, I'm sure, were in the sob category. Describe for our listeners where the two of you were that night, the atmosphere, and your reaction when it was announced that Donald Trump was president of the United States, because I think that leads to where we're heading.
It does.
We had the shortest election night party in history. We had some friends over, and as soon as the states that should have easily gone for Clinton didn't, we realized it was over. I think the place had emptied out by about 9:15. And I think the real reaction set in the next day, and Flora can probably best describe that.
So describe November 9th, Flora.
Well, I can't limit it to the 9th, but the week after, we looked at each other. We talked to our friends. We hadn't believed that this would really happen. I mean, I think part of the problem is how many of us didn't think this could possibly happen. And everybody who we were close to wanted something, wanted comfort, but also wanted some way to engage, to say, we made a mistake. I think it took us until after the inauguration to really understand. But the Sunday after the inauguration, we had people for coffee. Laszlo and I had looked at each other before that and said, we need the comfort of our friends. So we had about 25 people for brunch, and we started to talk about how upset we were, about what we could do. And people said, this is great, we want to come back. So we did another Sunday. And
now, this was literally at the time when the pink hats, everyone had marched on DC, right? So because I'm hearing so much about the swell this week, really beginning, especially with women, specifically with women, from that period of time in early February, in the bitter cold, right? Everyone went home from D.C. and wanted to do something, right?
Right. Or marched here in Philadelphia in the cold and needed to do something. And so we began to talk about what we could do. And we learned a lesson very quickly that we and the country should have known, what Republicans had known, how important it is to look at the state legislature, at the local level of government. We started saying, how can we have an impact? And a couple of people we knew, two state legislators, came and talked to us and started to say, this is really important. Here is the place where issues you care about will be addressed, where we talk about drawing legislative districts or gerrymandering, about gun control, about education, about healthcare. And then we started thinking we would get involved in that. And a state senator who is from our area came And he started to talk when somebody asked him about how much it costs to run an election for state senate in Pennsylvania, or in Philadelphia at least. And our jaws dropped. And after we picked them up, we said, maybe we could afford to raise money for a state legislator. By then we were meeting every month, I think. Laszlo?
Do you remember what that number was, Floor, before we jumped to Laszlo?
$100,000.
Okay.
No, it was $600,000.
That's what he said.
$600,000 to run. Think about that, Nestor, to run for a state Senate seat, $600,000.
This is an expensive media market, so that's part of it.
Yeah, and this guy is in Philadelphia, so it's most expensive.
So what happened from there is, I mean, this really was an evolutionary process. It was a lot of coffee and a lot of sticky buns. One of our consultants.
Hey, Nestor is a cat person.
Oh, so I love the cats. Flora,
you all knew that having a cat jump in the middle of
Flora, what's your cat's name?
This is Rocky.
Rocky, you have to be talking for Rocky to come up on the screen. So,
Rocky from Philadelphia, by the way.
Here's Rocky. Bye, so, Rocky.
Don, we decided that we would focus on state house races rather than state senate races. We really didn't know what we were doing. It's the ultimate in grassroots, amateur, make it up as you go along. We had no idea how much money we could raise. I mean, at one point we're thinking, well, God, it'd be great if we could raise $15,000 or $20,000 and throw around a little bit of money. We eventually registered with the state as a PAC, as a state PAC. And it's a form of incorporation, but it, you know, whatever. And we started raising money. After a while, we decided that our first goal was to raise $105,000, and the numbers kind of come out of the air, honestly. We decided we would give three state legislative candidates $35,000 each, and that's two important decisions. One is state house races, and the other is, let's give a lot of money, not a little money. Let's not give $2,000 or $5,000. Our goal was, can we impact a race? And so we started with the goal of $105,000. And we did it by talking to all our friends. There are no corporate interests involved. There are no lobbyists involved. What we started doing was having house parties in apartments in downtown Philadelphia. And people invited their friends. We didn't charge them to come. We were selling the organization. And as Forrest said, and I think this is really critical, a lot of what it was getting people to understand how important state government and the state legislature were. People just have never paid attention to that. Democrats have so been in love with presidential candidates that they have ignored the state. And in Pennsylvania, both the Senate and the House are controlled by Republicans.
Well, Laszlo, I'm going to pause you just for a second, and then I want you to pick the story up again. But I think, and both of you can react to this, this cycle and counting of the votes, which is a passion for Nestor, in Pennsylvania, absolutely epitomizes what you are talking about. Because it is, and correct me if I'm wrong, it is the Pennsylvania legislature that is preventing Pennsylvania from counting mail-in ballots as they arrive. So they're not going to be able to start until that morning hundreds of thousands of ballots, which seems insane to me. That's because that's controlled by the Republicans, and they didn't want the votes counted in a timely manner. And then you
watching this as an American, just as somebody during this election cycle where it's so clear the Republicans are doing everything possible to suppress votes, that it's so obvious.
Well, go back, Nestor, then pick that up on Laszlo and Flora's effort here. So you've got that where they won't let them count the votes. And then the other day, the president of the United States, who had originally said, if your ballot hasn't arrived by midnight, forget postmark, it shouldn't be counted. He then shifted that strategy and said that even if the ballots are there, any that aren't counted by midnight should be discounted. So in other words, if there are 150 or 200,000 or 300,000 ballots in Philadelphia waiting to be counted because they came in on time, but they weren't able to start until that morning, the president is now suggesting count whatever you can by midnight, and that's it. And Flora and Laszlo, am I capturing Pennsylvania accurately with that? If not, correct me.
I hadn't heard that, Don, yeah. That he was trying to...
Well, he said that 2 days ago, but am I right about the process in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Absolutely. You start counting mail-in ballots at 7 a.m. There's a process. I actually signed up yesterday to be a ballot canvas volunteer to monitor that process. Flora's going to be on a hotline on election day. So yeah, it's absolutely a big deal. I mean, the you're right about the state legislature imposing a ridiculous limitation. On the one hand, I don't think too many people take the president's line very seriously. There's nothing official about election day. The certification process is days later.
But Laszlo, I'm going to push back a little bit, and then I want you to jump back in and continue with your timeline. I'm going to suggest that what you just said, and I have incredible respect for your political acumen and your political instincts, but you just said, I don't think anyone takes the president seriously when he says that. I think one of our problems is that's been our approach. Well, nobody could believe that he really means that, but then we go down the rabbit hole.
Then you see him try to dismantle the post office.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Go ahead.
Don, I think you're right, but I don't, in this case, you're right. A lot of people do take him seriously. I don't think it's controlling, though. The reality is that there are legal processes that override his opinion or his assertion. Now, it's going to get messy. I absolutely think it's going to get messy. But I'm confident that the legal mechanisms in place will not stop the voting at midnight on election day. That's all.
God willing, I hope you're correct on that. So you were at the point where you're now at these parties, you're trying to impact a few races, and you're emphasizing how important it is that groups like yours begin to focus on state legislatures. Pick it up from there and how the group grew and then your impact.
Well, let me go through the rest of the 2018 right. election, which was the first time. We thought maybe we can raise $105,000. As we got close to the election, close to our date for distributing money, we had gotten past that. We ended up, and we're astonished at it. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. This is discovering it as we went along. We raised $210,000. This is from thinking we could raise 10. And we gave six candidates $35,000 each.
Wow.
Six candidates who were running against incumbent Republicans. Everything we were trying to do was to flip seats. To our amazement, five of them won.
And what Laszlo's not addressing is how we found those six candidates.
Yeah, good point.
Talk about that.
Well, actually, you're going to go back to Laszlo in a minute, because we set up a separate, what we called screening committee, to look at candidates. And we got names and suggestions of people who were known to the Democratic Party or known to the public somehow. And they very carefully screened these candidates, not with a litmus test for any one issue, but for the quality of their campaign, for their ability to raise money, reach voters, and for the difficulty of the race, how entrenched the Republican incumbent was. And then we had the party of the parties for the 2018 campaign. as I said, we had aimed for three candidates, and we were going to give them an arbitrary amount of $35,000 because we were convinced that was enough to really have an impact. And then we said we will have an election convention, a nominating convention, essentially. And on a pouring rainy day, right after Labor Day, we had 98 people gather in a downtown public space. They heard from the six candidates that we had, that the screening committee had narrowed down to. And as Laszlo said, by then we had knew we had money for four. So we had a vote for four. And the vote for the bottom three people was so close that our membership, if you call them that, said, wait. We got to get all these people. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. Shortchanged it. We were at 140, and after the vote, we decided we can raise another 70, which we did in about 3 weeks. And we supported all six of them, and five of them won. Let me go back to one thing real quick. The screening process, we got a lot of credit for this, and I hope it wasn't just dumb luck, but it sounded rigorous. We looked at data from the past elections. We looked at data on the characteristics, and then we started looking. We did a questionnaire for the candidates in which we asked them questions about their campaigns. And we talked to political insiders, and we somehow, with a group of seven very diverse people, mashed that up into screening down to six people.
If you're just tuning in, we're with Laszlo Boyd and Fleur Wolf, currently housed in Philadelphia. They are the founders of Change Pennsylvania, a group that can indeed be a model for other groups across the country in terms of how grassroots organization can bring about political change.
I got a question here. So I know some people, I want to put together one of these things to figure out who the next governor is going to be, support somebody here locally, or the next mayor. What would your advice be for a neophyte or a novice in beginning that journey? The little handbook where maybe you guys got some help, and clearly your background as a judge, background in politics, background in political science and activism in various ways probably helps, but just sort of a fundamental shell on what it looks like to put together this sort of an awareness group.
You got to have good friends to start with, and it helps if those friends have some political experience. And then it's going to take work. I mean, what Laszlo talked about with the screening committee was the hardest part of the work, the research, the study. But we started by the social angle, having people together, having a topic to talk about, bringing in a state rep, and building enthusiasm, I think, first of all. Maybe desperation.
I think that we had an interesting mix. We had some people who had experience and really knew something about politics, but I thought one of the most interesting aspects of our experience was that we didn't know this beforehand. I think this is one of the big lessons. There were a lot of people after 2016 who wanted to do something but didn't know how to do it. And in many cases, we're kind of political neophytes.
By the way, the reason you're here is you're talking to a guy who had the same exact experience as Don was running Baltimore County. I'm like, my wife had almost died two times before, and now Donald Trump's the president. And I'm thinking, why am I sitting here talking about baseball? You know, like, why am I not talking about something more significant after watching my wife rack up $2.5 million of medical bills and now, you know, everything going on with Obamacare? So that's why I move what I'm doing. So I think we all look to take some sort of action, right?
Nestor, exactly right. And we discovered that a lot of people who gave us money kind of looked at us as investment experts. They said, I want to do something, but I don't know enough to know where to put my money. I don't know how to pick a candidate. I'm going to let you all do that for me because I really care about it. Now, you ask for sort of lessons. There's no question that one of the lessons is that Donald Trump stimulated a lot of the enthusiasm and the energy. I mean, we had, even though we were focused
on... Oh, I'd be on the beach right now if Hillary was running this place. You know what I mean? Yeah. I certainly wouldn't have a mask on. I'm convinced of that.
Yep, yeah. So it really was a grassroots effort. What's interesting is that we made it up as we went along the first time. And then after we did well, and it really helped that people gave us a lot of credit. Being able to say you won 5 out of 6 gives you a credibility that you don't have when you say, well, we'd like to start something up. So we milked that for a lot. And we decided we're going to do this in 2020. Let's finish the job. Let's retake the house. And let's get more ambitious about what we're trying to achieve. You know, we thought 110, 220, wow, I wonder if we can do that again. And so there's a lot more to the story, but we ended up deciding in 2020 that our goal, which I'm going to give away part of the story and say we exceeded, was to raise $350,000.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah. And a little scary, Don.
I mean, but the fact that the two of you, this is the story. This is what we love. As Nestor said, this is why he started Baltimore Positive. The fact that two folks in the despondency of 2016 look at each other over coffee and say, we're not giving up. We're going to make a difference. And now, 4 years later, you won 5 out of 6 seats. You've now raised well above $300,000, looking to flip other seats. There has to be a sense among the both of you of, wow, job well done.
Oh, we'd love to take all the credit, Don. out of that first coffee came, or maybe out of one of the early ones, a group of people who said, we're really willing to work on this. And in addition to our screening committee, we had a steering committee. One of the things we learned, do not have two committees with the same first letter, because we couldn't keep them straight. But that steering committee and the house parties were the way that we got into people's minds and hearts. You know, we began to invite some of the candidates that we were reviewing to speak at each of the house parties. And so there'd be 20 or 30 or 40 people at a house party. And the candidates we were looking at were mostly almost all first-time candidates. They were mostly young and overwhelmingly female. And they were so appealing, these young women particularly, but the guys as well, that the audiences loved them and wanted to ask more questions and wanted to help them. And so that it was A, there was a steering group who kept things going, and B, people bought in because they wanted to belong to something as fun as this.
Well, where are you now? Here you go. You've done it. You got the money. Tell us where Change Pennsylvania is. Tell us how many candidates you're involved in and how many you're going to win.
Oh, well, I'll let Flora do the last part. we ended up raising, our goal was $350,000. We ended up raising close to $500,000.
Unreal. Wow.
We gave money to five of the five incumbents from last time as a starting point. We had a process where same screening committee that Flora described, we had this year a Zoom convention with 100 people on a Zoom call to vote. we ended up same kind of process. We picked 8 out of 10 candidates and then decided we were going to figure out a way to fund the last two, and we did it. So we have a list of 10 candidates. We got involved with some other organizations with something called the Pennsylvania Alliance, which brought in some big money from out of state and created some matching money. So we were able to support another few candidates secondarily with money that was a match to our money that we didn't raise directly. So overall, for the 2 years, we've raised almost $700,000.
I'm going to say you demurred when I said one of Philadelphia's power couples, but that's remarkable. Is it, getting back to Nestor's question, is what you've done replicable for folks who are listening all across? You know, we have listeners all over because of the format. Could other couples roll up their sleeves when this is done and say, let's do something similar? Is there a book, you know, is there a roadmap?
Well, I think we have to write that manual and sell it on eBay or,
there you
or
go.
Amazon. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the circumstances obviously are going to differ from place to place with, and there's sort of a checklist of things you'd want to look at, but mostly as Flora kept saying, this is a combination of engaging a bunch of people and working hard at it. And the number, Don, you know this, the number one lesson of politics, which most people forget, is persistence. Keep going.
This is where I want to come in and be persistent about your Maryland background and Governor Schaefer. And I live at the Inner Harbor. I walk past Governor Schaefer with a mask on every day that I walk past Governor Schaefer, which is a lot of days. And what would he make of this? And I'm talking not the Governor Schaefer at the end as the controller. I'm talking about the prime Governor Schaefer that you knew. Mayor Schaefer meets Governor Schaefer, who wants to still be Mayor Schaefer. That guy.
Nestor, I think the number one lesson is keep going. Everything is possible. Don't give up. Be your word, guys, positive. I mean, he just didn't accept no for an answer. And that's, I mean, you talk to all the people around, and Don knows lots of them, and you know lots of them, and they were all inspired by him, and he could be challenging to work for because he just didn't accept excuses. And that's what you got to do. You just got to keep going. Now, I think he would have been thrilled with something like this.
Laszlo, we just interviewed Ron Cassie, who, and you all are avid readers. You have to pick up, he's senior editor at Baltimore Magazine. You have to pick up his latest book. It's called If You Love Baltimore, It Will Love You Back. And it's a collection of 171 essays that he's written over the years of unique and quirky Baltimore stories. And there's one in there about a gentleman who had written a musical about Governor Schaefer. And they're talking about at that time, the mayor, and you know this well, Laszlo, one time when he walked in and he had seen an abandoned car on his way into the office. And in the story that Ron writes, Schaefer turns to his administrative assistant. He said, saw an abandoned car on the way in here this morning. I want it gone by noon. And the assistant said, well, where's the car? He said, well, that's for you to find out. In other words, you find out where the car are, maybe there are others, and get rid of the daggone car. So you're right. That sense of government can work. What would I love Nestor's question, and I know we're coming to the end here. What would Schaefer make, Laszlo, of Trumpism and the Trump phenomena? Because he was such a guy that – What would he?
No, I just wonder
this?
What he would watch these press conferences on TV.
Right.
What would he? What would he be saying to you if you're in the office with him in '88 at this? If Reagan behaved this way,
I think the Schaefer was one of the least ideological people you could ever find. He was a person entirely focused on results. Get it done. Don't just talk about it. Do it. So I think ultimately. He might be less put off by some of Trump's style because the governor had a unique style, but I think he would be incredibly put off by the failure to deliver. the failure to achieve results, the bluster about it, the excuse making. So that would be my takeaway.
The failure on COVID, he would find as inexcusable.
I can't imagine him on the State House steps trying to talk about getting PPP from South Korea and tests from South. I can't imagine what that would look like with him running our state. I just can't.
Well, Don, Nestor, I think there are a lot of people who look around now and say, we have failures of leadership in a lot of places. And while Schaefer wouldn't necessarily be the perfect example for all of them, his general approach of government's here to serve, it's here to get things done, it's not here to make excuses, really is still a lesson for our time.
I got one last thing for you, Laszlo, because it's not often I get poli-sci people and also obviously judges as well, and you, Flora. Thoughts about sort of a 101, because we do talk about you would say low information voters. I would say there's no more low information. It's just misinformation at this point. But you talked about young people getting involved and being around young people and professors and what I see young people doing is, if I want to give Jamie Harrison $10 on Venmo, I have a way to do that. Or if I want to, there's so many ways to give $5 or $10 if you want to be that person to just give some goodwill to Kentucky and Amy McGrath or Texas or anywhere else. But I would just say, for anyone who's new to the game, who's been misinformed, disinformed, didn't pay attention in eighth grade social studies to Mr. Schley teaching them Constitution, that there are so many misinformed people that I can't imagine at the level where you've taught it how frustrating it must be to just stop and try to reset the schoolhouse rock, right? Literally, the stuff that people are going to need to be deprogrammed here, looking for whatever the truth of the Constitution is going to be in the aftermath of all of this.
That's a terrific question, Nestor. I think we were somewhat protected from it because our friends may not be politically sophisticated, but they're educated. I would have said they were reasonably sophisticated politically, most of them. Some of them vary. Some of them have been candidates or worked in campaigns, and that helps. But the starting from scratch with, particularly with young people, is hard. Having candidates come and talk was a big help because they were young, they were very relatable. Teaching civics in high school again would be a real good thing. I think it's a tragic loss that we're not teaching.
Go ahead, Laszlo.
Nestor, I was just going to say, kind of directly in response, I used to teach courses on the presidency for years and years, and I have said of late, I'm not sure how I could teach this guy. I mean, I don't know. It's broken all the norms, and you're really right.
And some laws. Don't forget the laws.
Well, I'll tell you how bad it, and I know we have to go, but we did another show right before this one, and I walked out to take a break. And my wife said to me, and this is where we are, she said, I think I must have just misread this. She said, somebody just said that the president at one of his rallies the other day suggested that Joe Biden will be assassinated in a couple of weeks. She said, he didn't really say that. And I said, babe, I'm sorry. Yes, he did. And she just, literally, her jaw dropped, and she said, I don't even, just what you said, Laszlo, how do you teach about that? A candidate talking about another candidate being assassinated 3 weeks into the presidency.
It's scary stuff, and the next 4 days are going to test us all.
Well, that's where I need you to take us out, because you guys are on the ground. You are ground zero. I mean, Nestor likes to kid about Kornacki at the big board. Everybody is going to look at Philadelphia.
Well, Philadelphia's had some unrest this week as well. I mean, there's just a lot of moving parts here with voting, especially in your state and counting votes. Any crystal ball from both of you over the next, not just 3 or 4 days, the next 10, 12 days, right?
Absolutely, Nestor.
What's Flora? Pennsylvania look like, guys?
a Pollyanna-ish can you be? I have all my fingers and toes crossed. Philadelphia will turn out. And I think it will be a high turnout. Be interesting to look upstate a bit, particularly into Northeast Pennsylvania.
Guys, I think that I've been saying this all along. I think Pennsylvania is going to go for Biden, and I don't think it's going to be a squeaker. I'm basing it on the level of volunteerism that I see, the level of activism that I see. This is significant, Don. The hard work of local campaigns, there's going to be a certain bottom-up, not just top-down quality to this election. This kind of makes me sick, but the amount of money in Pennsylvania this year is just obscene, but it's a measure of Democratic energy. So I would mark Pennsylvania for Biden and feel pretty strongly about it.
Well, I think if that's the case, then we will have President Biden. Nestor Flora Wolf, Laszlo Boyd, incredible organization, Chains Pennsylvania. They didn't just give up. They didn't just sit around and sulk. They said, we're going to make a difference. Philadelphia's power couple. Nestor, take us out of here.
Next time I'm up there for some Dandan noodles, I'll honk the horn at you guys, pull into the alley there. I told my wife, Rittenhouse, you know, some point we take the masks on. We're getting up there to that side of Philadelphia. And hopefully everybody stays safe up there and throughout the election as well. Appreciate Don Mueller bringing in all the power couples and all the power people. We're going to hear from former Governor Martin O'Malley, as well as Congressman John Sarbanes, former Congresswoman Donna Edwards, all this week at Baltimore Positive. Ted Venatoulis, the new app coming this week, all loaded up in the podcast audio vault, as well as everything we're doing at WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive.